I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
It is now a tradition to do 6 impossible episodes a couple of times a year, full of topics that for whatever reason we can't cover on their own as a standalone episode. Sometimes there's not quite enough information. Sometimes there's something about it that just doesn't lend itself to standalone treatment. Whatever. We are due for one of these. So today we have a set of stories that are all about frontline heroism. Most of them are also requests from listeners. And so we are calling it 6 impossible episodes, soldiers, snipers, and spies.
And first up is the only one of these who was not a listener request, at least not one that we can recall or know of, but it came from a Mental Floss article called 5 of the Fiercest One-Liners in History. Milunka Savic was born in Serbia on June 28th of 1888, and in 1912, at the age of 24, she joined the Serbian army. There's a bit of discrepancy about how this came to be, whether she adopted her brother's name to enlist, or whether she went with her brother in disguise and they both enlisted together. But regardless, Milunka wound up in the army under the name of her brother, Milun.
Savic maintained this disguise and served in both the First and Second Balkan Wars, and by the Second she had earned the rank of corporal in the Iron Regiment. But then, in 1913, she was wounded in the chest at the Battle of Regalnica, and while treating this injury, field surgeons discovered her disguise.
It's like Shades of Mulan, the cartoon.
Yeah.
Women were not allowed in the Serbian army in combat roles, but Savic had already been serving honorably for quite some time, so punishing her for it would have been awkward at best. She was offered a transfer to the army's nursing division, but Savic didn't want to be a nurse, and standing at attention, she made it clear that all she wanted to do was to serve her country in combat.
The commanding officer told her that he would consider her request, and he would give her an answer in the morning. And Savic, still standing at attention, answered, "I will wait."
She stood at attention for the next hour until being given permission to go back to the infantry.
From there, Savic served for the entirety of World War I, and there's a lot of incredibly dramatic stuff in terms of stories about her valor in battle. But at this point, it's a little hard to establish what's factual and what's legendary. It is clear, though, that she fought bravely with multiple units across more than one Allied military.
By the end of her service, she had earned Serbia's highest military honor, the Order of Karađorđe Star with Swords. She also received Serbia's Gold Medal for Valor, the French Legion of Honor, grades 4 and 5, the French Croix de Guerre, and multiple other military honors from multiple other nations. She became the most highly decorated woman in all of World War I.
After the war, France offered her a military pension, but instead she went back to Belgrade, got married, and had a daughter and adopted 3 other children. She was named a National Hero of Serbia and established a small hospital. And for this hospital work, she actually wound up in a concentration camp for part of World War II. She was eventually released, and she lived until October of 1973.
In 2013, the Serbian Armed Forces Military Club opened an exhibition called Milunka Savic, Heroine of the Great War. But even so, there is not a whole lot of information available about her in English.
I wish there were. I found one video that had all of these stories of, like, battlefield derring do, but I couldn't even figure out what the sources for that video's stories were. But anyway, she seems amazing. And now we have someone else who served in the Serbian army also in World War I, but in this case was not Serbian. Listeners Laura and Meg have both asked for a podcast on Flora Sands, who after her marriage was Flora Sands Judinich. She was born to an Irish family on January 22nd, 1876, near York, England, and she was the youngest of 8 children. She got what was a standard education for her her social class. She was educated by a governess, and she trained to be a secretary. She also learned first aid through the ladies' nursing yeomanry.
After the start of World War I, Sands tried to volunteer with the British Armed Forces, but was turned down. So she volunteered with a St. John ambulance unit that had been mustered to work in Serbia, which departed on August 12, 1914.
After a difficult and dangerous journey, the last leg of which took place aboard a cattle transport that sailed through a huge thunderstorm, she arrived in Serbia to find a telegram waiting for her, informing her that her father had suddenly died.
For the next 3 months, Sands threw herself into exhausting, difficult work as a nurse. The hospital where she was stationed was short-staffed and low on supplies, and their accommodations were so limited that she and 6 other nurses had to take turns sleeping on straw mattresses in a single room, with only one blanket shared among them.
So she went home. Not to argue for reassignment, but to raise funds for desperately needed supplies for the Serbian troops. She spent 6 weeks doing this and raised £2,000, then made the trip back to Serbia with 120 tons of supplies.
For a time, she continued her work in hospitals, learning on the job and performing everything from minor surgical procedures to administrative work. And her work was important from the start, but it became especially critical in February of 1915, when a typhus epidemic claimed as many as 200 victims a day, including hospital staff. It was so bad that by the time it was over, there were only one doctor, an orderly, and some nurses left at Sands Hospital.
Sands returned to England again for a time in 1915, but when the war escalated again in Serbia, she went back. She intended to go back to the hospital where she had been working previously. But once she arrived, that proved to be impossible. It was just too dangerous, and there wasn't any kind of unit or convoy going that direction that she could travel with. So instead, she began working as a Red Cross ambulance driver alongside the Iron Regiment.
When Serbia was invaded in October 1915, the Serbian army was forced into a long retreat through Albania over incredibly difficult terrain and in desperately cold weather. And Sands' service during this retreat was so dedicated that the unit's commanding officer, Colonel Milic, allowed her to officially enlist, at which point she took on a combat role, and she was at this time 39 years old.
This seems like a discrepancy between Milunka Savic's story and Flora Sands' story in terms of how easy it was for them to become actually enlisted in the military. I don't know the reason for that other than the fact that this happened a few years later and the circumstances were a lot more dire in terms of the war. But if you have knowledge, feel free to drop us a note. Regardless, though, Sands spent the next 6 years with the Serbian army, ultimately attaining the rank of captain. Initially, the other soldiers in her unit called her our English woman, but eventually they started addressing her with the same word that they used for each other, which translated to brother.
Even when Sands was at home on leave, or recovering after being wounded, which she was twice, she still tirelessly worked to support the Serbian cause. She raised funds, she rallied support, and she gathered supplies. She wrote an autobiography titled An English Woman Sergeant in the Serbian Army, specifically to try to raise Serbian support among the British. And when an injury prevented her from returning to the front, she went back to working at a hospital. Like Milunka Savic, she was also awarded the Order of Karađorđe's Star.
Sands married Yuri Vladimich Judnich on May 14, 1927, and they moved to Belgrade. They both retired from the service, but she was really not good at living in the quiet life. She tried her hand at a lot of different projects before she and her husband were called up for service again in World War II. They were soon captured by the Germans and imprisoned, and they were eventually released, although her husband died in 1941. At that point, she went back to England, where she died on November 24th of 1956. Before we get to two more stories, we will have a quick sponsor break. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/Papertarian.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Our next story is from World War II, and it was requested by Jack, Kate, Pavel, Molly, Amber, and surely many, many others. Ludmila Pavlichenko was born in Belaya Zerkov, Ukraine, not far from Kiev, in 1916.
In her youth, she joined the Volunteer Society for the Assistance of Army Aircraft and Fleet. This is an organization that combined patriotism, athletics, and some paramilitary training. And in spite of the term volunteer, it was one of those things where participation was basically expected of all youth. And it was here that Pavlichenko started learning to shoot. She earned a certificate in marksmanship and a badge in sharpshooting. And when she enrolled at Kiev University in 1937, she joined the track team and also went to a sniper's school to further develop her skill.
When Germany invaded the Soviet Union on June 22, 1941, Pavlichenko decided to put her training to use and tried to join the army. She was, at first, turned down because she was a woman, even after she showed them her certificate and badge. And in what's become a running theme on this episode, she was encouraged to become a nurse instead.
Pavlichenko persisted, though, and she was finally accepted into the Red Army's 25th Chapayev Rifle Division after passing an impromptu test. She was basically with a unit that was defending a hill, and someone pointed out two Romanians who were working with the Germans and told her to shoot them, which she did.
Pavlichenko became an exceptionally skilled and feared military sniper. In her first 75 days of service, she had 187 confirmed kills. By the end of her service, that number had risen to 309. 36 of those were German snipers, some in what were effectively duels with the enemy. From her point of view, especially when it came to the snipers, the work she was doing was ultimately saving many other lives.
Her reputation really spread among the German military, which knew her by name. They started playing announcements over loudspeakers in places where they thought that she was, trying to get her to defect. They were basically like, Lyudmila, come over here. We have chocolate. Over the course of her career, she was wounded in combat four times, including being hit with shrapnel in the face.
She also became the face of some of the Red Army's propaganda. In addition to her skill as a marksman and sharpshooter, she was also very attractive. And while trying to join the army in the first place, people had commented on her well-styled hair and beautifully manicured nails, as well as making sexist remarks about whether she should even be in the army in the first place.
And that line of questioning did not stop even after she had distinguished herself in the army. In 1942, at the age of 25, Pavlichenko became the first Soviet soldier to visit the White House as part of an effort to get the United States to support Soviet war efforts on the European continent. It was during this tour that she became friends with the First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. But the media coverage of this visit and tour really focused relentlessly on her appearance and what she was wearing, which often was literally her uniform. Reporters frequently criticized it for not being very stylish or flattering to her figure.
I know you're an amazing sharpshooter, but can we talk about your outfit?
That was really the subtext. A lot. She eventually stopped. She stopped playing nicely. She was like, would you ask that of a man?
Once Pavlichenko returned home, she was promoted to major, was named Hero of the Soviet Union, and eventually was put on a postage stamp. When the war was over, she finished her education and she became a historian.
In 1957, she reconnected with Eleanor Roosevelt in what was an emotional reunion, which is covered beautifully in the Rejected Princess entry on her. We will link to that in the show notes for real. It does, especially this part of the story, a lot of beautiful justice, far more than we did just now.
After three stories about people who were offered jobs in nursing rather than combat or went into combat after nursing, we wanted to make sure we also talked about someone who was a nurse through and through, and that's Lieutenant Colonel Vivian Bullwinkle, also known as Bully. This one is a tearjerker, and the listener request we got for it was actually about a massacre that she survived.
Vivian Bullwinkle was born in South Australia on December 18, 1915. She was trained as a nurse and midwife and was working at Jessie McPherson Hospital in Melbourne at the start of World War II. At that point, she joined the Australian Army Nursing Service. She was assigned to the 13th Australian General Hospital, or 13th AGH, although she also spent a few weeks with the 10th AGH. She was ultimately stationed in what's now Malaysia.
In late 1941, Japanese forces started moving down the Malay Peninsula. And at the start of 1942, the 13th AGH was forced to evacuate across the Straits of Johor to Singapore. Soon, Japanese forces moved on Singapore as well, forcing a second retreat aboard the SS Vinerbrook on February 12, 1942. Bullwinkle was among the last group of nurses evacuated, along with a group of women and children, as well as injured soldiers.
On February 13th, a Japanese bomber spotted the Vinerbrook and attacked. The ship sank, and some of the survivors came aboard on Banka Island off the coast of Sumatra, where they gathered on Raji Beach. At first, their group was made up of 22 nurses, including Bullwinkle, along with some women and children, and about 100 British soldiers joined them on the beach the following day.
Eventually, the group decided that their best course of action was to surrender to the Japanese. The civilian women and children left to find someone to whom they might surrender. The nurses and soldiers, including the wounded men, stayed behind.
But when the Japanese soldiers eventually did arrive at the beach on February 16th, they did not accept any surrender. They divided the soldiers into two groups, shot them, and bayoneted the survivors. Then they directed the nurses to march into the sea. As they did, their matron, Irene Drummond, told them, "Chin up, girls. I'm proud of you, and I love you all."
Then the Japanese soldiers opened fire, and they machine gunned them all to death from behind.
Vivian Bullwinkle, shot in the abdomen, played dead in the water until she washed ashore, at which point the Japanese soldiers had gone. She found a surviving soldier, Private Kingsley, and the two of them hid in the jungle. Bullwinkle tended to both of their wounds and sneaked to a nearby village to beg for food for them, putting her life at risk every time she did.
Soon, though, it became clear that they could not survive long-term in this way, and she and Kingsley decided to once again try to surrender. And this time they did successfully surrender, although Kingsley died shortly afterward as a result of his injuries.
Bullwinkle was taken to a prisoner of war camp in Sumatra, where she was reunited with the survivors of the sinking of the Vinerbrook who had not come ashore at that beach. She told them what had happened and how she had survived, but from there they all kept it secret. It was obvious that her life would be in serious danger if her captors learned that she had witnessed the Banka Island massacre.
Bullwinkle and the other survivors of the Vinerbrook were all kept as prisoners of war for more than 3 years. And that whole time, Bullwinkle continued her work as a nurse, keeping both herself and many of her fellow POWs alive. And in 1946, once the war was over, Bullwinkle testified before the War Crimes Tribunal in Tokyo as to what had happened. She also contacted the families of the nurses that had been on that beach with her to tell them about their loved ones' last moments and final words.
She retired from the Army in 1947 and returned to civilian life as a nurse. She eventually became director of nursing at Melbourne's Fairfield Hospital, and she spent time raising funds for a nursing memorial and a memorial to those who were killed on Banka Island.
She was awarded the Royal Red Cross for exceptional services, devotion to duty, and professional competence in British military nursing. Her uniform, complete with a bullet hole, is part of the collection at the Australian War Memorial.
In 1977, she married, becoming Vivian Bullwinkle Statham, and she died on July 3rd, 2000. We're going to take one more quick break before we have two more stories. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Our next request actually comes from author Mary Robinette Cole. When we did our live show at C2E2 in 2016, I stopped by her booth to say hello because I love her books, and she suggested that we look into it. And then she followed up on the Jonathan Colton cruise in 2017, which she was one of the entertainers on, and I went on vacation on. So we are hopping back to World War One again for the 1st Russian Women's Battalion of Death.
Individual women were involved in the Russian military, both officially and unofficially, from the very beginning of Russian involvement in World War One. So many women had expressed an interest in serving that on June 10th of 1915, an official policy was handed down that women could join the army on a case-by-case basis as long as each case was approved by Tsar Nicholas II.
All of that changed following the February Revolution, which began in March 1917 on the Gregorian calendar, but in February on the Julian calendar. The February Revolution was the product of both food shortages and Russia's involvement in World War I, which had been just devastating in terms of both the Russian economy and the cost of human life. The February Revolution began with food riots and strikes and ultimately ended with the forced abdication of the Tsar, who would later be executed.
The provisional government that followed the end of the Tsarist rule granted women a number of rights, including the right to vote and to serve on juries. The provisional government was also far more open to the idea of women in military service, especially given a dire need for new recruits, and the fact that the revolution itself had really disrupted the Russian military.
The first Russian women's battalion of death was the work of Maria Bochkareva, also known by the nickname Yashka. She was one of the many women who had individually petitioned to join the Russian army in 1915 and had ultimately been allowed to join. She had already been wounded and recovered twice and had been awarded the St. George's Cross for Valor when the February Revolution began.
About 2 months after the February Revolution, she conceived of forming a unit of about 300 women who would, quote, serve as an example to the army and lead the men into battle. These women would be highly trained and extraordinarily disciplined, and they would follow the same protocol as other Russian battalions of death, which was a formal designation within the military. These all-volunteer battalions swore to fight to the death and were marked with special red and black chevrons on their sleeves and skulls and crossbones on their banners.
Bochkareva began recruiting on May 21st, 1917, and she got 2,000 responses almost immediately. Following her example, other women began seeking approval to recruit for additional women's units all around Russia. The first Russian women's battalion of death ultimately had 300 members, but at least 4,000 women joined the Russian military in other women's units in World War I.
On June 21st, in uniform and with close-cropped hair, the newly formed 1st Russian Women's Battalion of Death marched through Petrograd in front of a cheering crowd, where they were given gifts from the 1st and 3rd Russian armies, as well as a banner from the Minister of War. Part of their route was to the graves of protesters who had been killed during the February Revolution.
At this point, the 1st Russian Women's Battalion of Death seems like it's on track for a similar story arc to World War II's Night Witches. The Night Witches were founded, along with two other all-female regiments, by Marina Raskova. The Night Witches went on to become household names in the Soviet Union, and they spent most of World War II harassing and terrifying the German army. We have an episode about them in the archive.
But that wasn't the case. When the 1st Women's Battalion of Death arrived at the Western Front, they faced derision and harassment from the men in the 10th Army that were already stationed there. The Women's Battalion was part of the Kerensky Offensive, and they did exactly what they'd intended to do. They charged into the fray, essentially shaming reluctant male soldiers into following. They also reportedly found and destroyed a large stash of vodka in the Austro-German trenches before the other Russian soldiers could get to it.
That influence, which was part of the point from the beginning, didn't last, though. The Kerensky Offensive was ultimately unsuccessful, and as the tide turned against the Russian army, the Women's Battalion of Death wanted to keep fighting, as had been their mission from the beginning. But their determination really started to inspire resentment instead of valor from the male soldiers already there. By July 3rd, the offensive had dissolved completely, and Bochkareva herself was attacked and beaten by a mob that demanded that the women stop fighting.
Not long after, General Lavr Kornilov replaced General Brusilov, and a second set of demonstrations known as the July Days rose up in Petrograd. Many of the July Days demonstrators were soldiers, and Kornilov deployed the military to try to suppress the uprising. Because Bochkareva knew Kornilov, she and the rest of her battalion suffered guilt by association, and they were branded as counter-revolutionaries. They faced so much violent hostility from the rest of the force that they were moved out of combat.
Kornilov, who had not shown Brusilov's approval of women's battalions in the first place, then stopped accepting new female recruits and started the process of dissolving the women's battalions.
By this point, Russia was facing catastrophic economic and human losses from the war, and an uprising from within in the form of the Russian Revolution. When demobilization of the military began on November 10, 1917, there was almost nothing in the way of support for returning soldiers. Records from this period are so spotty that the ultimate fate of most of the 1st Women's Battalion of Death is unknown. Regardless, what had initially seemed like a bold attempt to democratize and bring gender equality to Russia's military ultimately fell apart.
Botchkareva herself traveled to the United States in 1918 and dictated a memoir while she was there. She also met with President Woodrow Wilson, where she pleaded for American assistance in Russia. She later went to London, where she did the same thing before George V.
She was apparently invited to join the White Army during the Russian Civil War. This led to her being captured by the Bolsheviks and executed by firing squad on May 16th, 1920.
Now we were going on to our last story, which we are going to end with a spy, which is a spy lots of folks have asked for, but most of the requests came via people sharing her obituary to our Facebook wall or tweeting us a link to it, so we don't have a list of names. It's much easier for us to find episode requests in our email than on our social media most of the time.
Stephanie Check Rader was born Stephanie Check on May 16, 1915. She grew up in Poughkeepsie, New York. Her parents had immigrated from Poland, and they didn't speak much English, so she learned Polish at home and actually didn't begin to learn English until she started school. But she eventually became fluent in both languages.
In high school, one of her teachers submitted an application to Cornell University on her behalf, and she was awarded a full scholarship to go there. She graduated with a master's degree in chemistry in 1937, and she later got a job as a translator.
When the United States entered World War II, she joined the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps. But within a couple of years, she had caught the attention of the Office of Strategic Services, or the OSS. This was an intelligence office and a precursor to the CIA. In 1945, she was stationed in Poland, ostensibly to work as a clerk at the U.S. Embassy. But in reality, she was a spy.
She did most of her work in plain clothes and unarmed. She would later say, quote, "They gave me a gun, but I never carried a gun. What the heck was I going to do with a dumb gun?"
Under the pretense of finding members of her family, she traveled extensively away from Warsaw alone, gathering huge amounts of information about Soviet troop movements and social conditions, and passing all of that information back to the OSS. She also started to work as a courier, carrying secret information, and this was a particularly risky assignment, since if she were caught, she would probably just disappear.
Some of her male colleagues, in fact, were caught and just disappeared during this period. She was very nearly apprehended on January 15, 1946. She was leaving the embassy in Berlin, and she was given a set of documents to take with her back to Warsaw. She really didn't want to do this because she had been under an increasing level of scrutiny. She suspected that authorities were going to try to take any opportunity to arrest her. Some of her colleagues at the OSS, as we said, had simply vanished at this point during their service in Poland.
As she approached a border checkpoint, she realized that Soviet police were there waiting to arrest her. So she took a really risky move of passing the documents off to a civilian with instructions on where to deliver them. So she did not have those documents on her when she was questioned.
While she was still serving in Poland, her cover was actually blown by the careless behavior of a superior officer who was stationed in Paris. Even though her cover was blown, she insisted on staying in Poland, even though she was at much greater risk, until she had finished her assignment.
Finally, back in the United States, she married Brigadier General William Rader and eventually retired from the Army. She attained the rank of captain, and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has called her one of the most successful intelligence agents of post-World War II Poland.
She died on January 21st, 2016, at the age of 100, and she was buried at Arlington National Cemetery. She was posthumously awarded the Legion of Merit in 2016 as well. That was something she had been recommended for all the way back in 1946 and denied, possibly because at the time there were so few women working as covert agents for the United States. And those are our soldiers, snipers, and spies for our 6 impossible episodes today.
What's up with listener mail, Tracy?
I have some listener mail from Jenny. It is called Kentucky Colonels, and it is following our episode about the Kentucky Derby. I am going to skip some particularly fond introduction because she's so kind. It feels a little self-congratulatory to read it. And then continues, I just finished the episode on the Kentucky Derby and had to write in. You giggled when you mentioned that habit of the state of Kentucky to call people colonels when they held no actual military role. This reaction is shared by much of the world outside of Kentucky, and it's one that I found myself laughing at too when I first heard about it. Being born and raised in New Hampshire, I often felt like I'd moved to another planet when I moved to Bowling Green, Kentucky to teach. Once there, I learned more about this proud tradition from students and colleagues and thought I'd share a bit with you. The title of colonel can be bestowed upon anyone in recognition of their accomplishments or works serving their community, state, nation, or the world. New colonels are nominated by active colonels and can be national heroes like astronaut John Glenn, writers like Hunter S. Thompson and Duncan Hines, artists and entertainers like Ansel Adams, Johnny Depp, Ashley Judd, and Betty White. I'm just going to pause for a second and say I love that Betty White is a Kentucky colonel. To return to the letter, athletes like Muhammad Ali and Arthur Ashe, world leaders and foreign royalty like Winston Churchill or Princess Anne, and of course, businessmen like KFC's own Colonel Sanders. They can also be private citizens from all walks of life working to better the lives of people of Kentucky. The title is bestowed by the governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky by issuing letters patent and has been around since the American Revolution. They even have their own toast written in 1936 that I thought you'd both love. Our show has run a little long today, so I'm not going to read this entire toast, but we are going to put it in the show notes so you can go to our website and read it. Jenny says that in 2015, a dear friend of hers became a Kentucky colonel, which is a lovely story. So thank you so much for all of that information, Jenny. That is indeed lovely. Thank you for not being one of the folks who assumed we had literally never heard of Colonel Sanders. We got a number of emails assuming we had never heard of Colonel Sanders, but we don't live under rocks. So
I do. I'm like Patrick the Starfish.
But we've definitely heard of Colonel Sanders. So if you would like to write to us about this or any other podcast, we're at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/MissedInHistory and on Twitter at MissedInHistory. Our Tumblr is missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we're on Pinterest and Instagram, both at MissedInHistory. You can come to our parent company's website, which is howstuffworks.com, to find information about just about anything your heart desires. And you can come to our website, which is missedinhistory.com, where you can find show notes, including where we will put that toast for the Kentucky Colonels, archive of every single episode we've ever done, other cool stuff. So you can do all that and a whole lot more at howstuffworks.com or missedinhistory.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.